Everyone here knows that small businesses are where most new jobs begin. And you know that while corporate profits have come roaring back, smaller companies haven't. So for everyone who speaks so passionately about making life easier for job creators, this plan's for you.
That's President Barack Obama, of course, speaking before Congress last week, asking for bipartisan support for his jobs bill. U.S. Bank Small Business Survey in July found that Ohio's small business owners still see the economy as being in a recession, and most don't expect to generate revenue growth next year. So will the president's proposals help Ohio's small businesses prosper and grow? Joining us to start the conversation today is Doug Buchanan. He's managing editor of Columbus Business First. Welcome to the show, Doug.
Good morning, Ann.
And to our listeners, if you're a small business owner, please call us or email us. Let us know what you think you need to prosper and grow in this economy. Not everybody has been able to crunch the numbers on the president's plan, but you already know. What do you need? What can government do to help you through this recession or end of recession or however you want to define it? Give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can go to our Facebook page and contact us there, All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. We'll be checking that routinely. So, Doug, the American Jobs Act of 2011 provides a tax cut for small businesses to help them hire and expand now, and an additional tax cut to any business that hires or increases wages. Is that how businesses operate? Do they really think about kickbacks from the government to hire people?
Right. Well, I think that that is a consideration. It can certainly help, but it is not going to be the final determiner of hiring decisions. I think that small businesses still want to see the economy as a whole improve and show some consistency going forward, because you could say that all of these are temporary stimulus-related measures, whether it's on spending or tax cuts, but you know, a business has a longer-term focus than that. If they're going to hire somebody, it's great to get that tax cut, but they're also going to have that person on the payroll, and if they don't see business improving over the next X number of months or the next year, they're just simply not going to take advantage of the tax credit.
It feels like we're in this big, giant game of chicken. Who's going to take the risk first? Is it going to be big corporations? We know big corporations and big companies are sitting on billions and billions and billions in resources. They're not spending it for the same reason small businesses aren't. It's too great of a risk.
Right. I think the American worker has shown a remarkable improvement in efficiency by necessity over the past couple of years. The people who still have jobs are working harder, working longer hours. And businesses so far have been able to get by with that. There are certainly some industries out there that are adding workers, but by and large, if you can get by with the workers that you have and you're still, again, going back to that uncertainty about the long-term growth, then you're going to sit pat and hold your money, because that was quite a harrowing recession we just went through, and I think it scared a lot of companies to make sure that they have the resources to withstand another one.
Coming up later, we're going to welcome the COO of the Computer Workshop, Inc. It's a family-owned technical and professional development training center. That'll be Terry Williams-Davies. She'll be coming up in our next segment. Joining us right now, Doug Buchanan. He's managing editor of Columbus Business First. We're talking about the impact of small businesses from the proposal that the president put forth for a joint session of Congress last week. We'd like to know, what do you think you need as a small business owner or manager to keep things going and to make it through whatever stage of the economy we're in now, whether you think it's still a recession or not? What do you need to survive and make a go of it? 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org.
And you mentioned a second ago that it's the government can't do it. The government can't be the one that actually forces the hiring decisions. I mean, I think part of the problem as well is we had the previous stimulus, much larger stimulus plan, and the idea was to, again, temporarily goose the economy enough so that there was some momentum that would be built up and businesses would expand and start hiring. obviously that didn't work as well as intended. The problem is we just don't know what would have happened if they had done nothing at that time. It reminds me of the Y2K scenario from several years ago. You spent millions of dollars and all of these man hours fixing computer code, and then Y2K came and nothing happened. Well, you know, you can't necessarily say that Y2K was...
Maybe it's because they fixed all the computer codes.
Exactly. And maybe the economy that we have is a pretty darn good economy compared to what it would have been had we done nothing. But the fact of the matter is we spent all of that money and we have a still faltering economy. So I think that the individual ideas in President Obama's plan are good and solid, but I just don't know if there's the confidence out there that if we go ahead and spend all of that money, that it's really going to be enough of a goose for the economy, or are we just going to be revisiting this in another year or 2 years?
A panel discussion I moderated last week that included OSU Professor Emeritus Stephen Buser, of Finance at Ohio State, he said that he doesn't think it's going to have the kind of impact that people want it to have, nor did the last stimulus have the kind of impact people wanted it to have, number one, because it came in too late, and that this one piggybacking on that one isn't necessarily going to generate it. However, if the president did nothing, which he says is technically probably what should be done, nothing.
Okay.
That would be politically unsustainable. So that's why we're asking small businesses now to respond and tell us, what do you think government should do? What would you, what could the president do?
True. I mean, I think that businesses would like to see some of these tax cuts and regulatory changes. I mean, they would always like to see this kind of a thing. It's just now they have the upper hand in far as what they demand. I mean, Washington has to listen because right now doing nothing, as you said, is just politically unfeasible. You can't just let the economy slide like this. So, you know, they're going to talk about some plans, and depending on what gets implemented, I mean, it will make some small difference. I just think the question is, how big of a difference, and you know, will it be enough to really get that momentum going so that when this spending stops, the economy can ride on its own? And I just don't think there's any clear answer to that.
Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We're talking about small business and the president's plan to help small businesses in his latest jobs package. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org if you want to go that way. Now, there was, I can't remember what I was listening to, but it was a small business owner in Oregon who said that what they're concerned about and how they might use a stimulus like this and this kind of tax break for hiring new people wouldn't necessarily work for them. What they're concerned about is keeping the labor they have now that they're having a hard time sustaining because they're the skilled workers they need. There aren't enough people trained to do what they need them to do to letting them go.
Okay.
They're welders. And I thought that was really an interesting point of view, that they're scraping by just to keep employed the people they need so that when the economy does really feel like it's recovering, they'll have the people in place to do the job otherwise.
Right. I would imagine there's a lot of businesses out there that before they start thinking about hiring new people are going to start thinking about compensating the ones that they have and you know, providing some measure of appreciation for the last couple of years where, you know, there were layoffs, obviously, furloughs. I mean, they're just whatever way that they could save on personnel costs, companies were doing it. And so the employees that were remaining, yeah, I would agree that I think as the economy improves and the job market improves and jobs start moving around, I think there are a lot of businesses that are going to have to start thinking very hard about the retention strategies because, you know, let's say when the job market does come back, I would imagine there will be a lot of movement after the last couple of years.
The millions of small business people, according to the New York Times columnist in the Dispatch today, it was an article in the Dispatch, a column there, face the same problem, lending standards. They're too tight to help them afford to hire or expand. So how much access to credit, how much does access to credit have to do with the success or failure of a small business today?
Well, it certainly has a lot to do with their ability to expand and to hire. If they've got a certain project that there's something that they want to build, or even just again personnel that they want to add. The problem is really that it's not that the banks are not lending. Banks get pretty defensive about that point that they're not lending. What is different though is that the standards are higher. So for small businesses, you can get a loan, but you have to be in pretty good shape already to qualify for it. The banks are just not going to go out there on a ringer like they may have 5 or 6 years ago and take a chance to get to make the money work. That is in fact a hindrance to the expansion of the job market.
And especially small businesses rely on lines of credit for cash flow much more than the big corporations and the larger companies do.
Right. So you're absolutely right that any time that the bank and the banks have retrenched. I mean, I think if you talk to the banks, that they will say that the retrenchment period is largely over for them. I mean, they are out there. You see the loan volumes going up, but I think that everybody just got used to the environment pre-recession when nearly anything goes, and now that we're kind of back to a more prudent lending environment, that's where you're seeing the squawking.
It's the contrast. So to go back to the way it was isn't an option necessarily either.
Well, exactly right. I mean, we would not want to go back to the, just look at the mortgages. I mean, the kinds of mortgages that they were giving out and to that level of applicant. I mean, we certainly wouldn't want to go back there. And by the same token, anytime you get into a boom cycle and a bubble, you're going to have speculative lending, speculative building out there that just shouldn't have been done in the first place. And you're obviously going to see a lot less of that for a good number of years.
Yeah, another point that Stephen Buser made last week was that there's something like two houses built for every family in the country. So we've got plenty of places to live.
Ever bigger houses as well.
Yeah, that too. Soaring. So the construction industry has taken a huge hit. It's not recovered, obviously. How does that pan out across the world of small business?
Well, number one, those are a lot of small businesses. I mean, there are certainly gargantuan construction companies, the kind that are building the Ohio State Medical Center and things of that sort. But, I mean, you're talking about a spinoff of an enormous number of smaller companies and an enormous number of laborers who are just not finding the work like they used to, and it's not just the residential side. I mean, we're talking about a commercial sector as well that was booming. Now that is starting to recover a bit quicker than residential. I mean, residential, it's going to be a good long while before that retrenchment gives up.
My guest is Doug Buchanan, managing editor of Columbus Business First. We're talking about small business and the president's plan for a job creation package. It's going before Congress right now. If you have a question or comment for Doug, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Coming up, Terry Williams-Davey, COO of the Computer Workshop. It's a family-owned technical and professional development training center. If you have a question or comment, give us a call. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Israeli diplomats fled an embassy under attack by protesters in Egypt. Others were asked to leave Turkey. And later this month, Palestinians hope to win formal recognition at the United Nations. I'm Neil Conan. Israel's new sense of isolation, even a sense of siege. Plus, why your iPod is so important to your workout. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And Talk of the Nation is on 89.7 NPR News this afternoon from 2 until 4. Thanks for joining us today for All Sides with Ann Fisher. And it's 74 degrees in downtown Columbus. Sunshine today, a high of 85. There is a chance of showers and thunderstorms this evening and tonight, an overnight low of 56.
Support for 89.7 comes from the state auto insurance companies providing home, automobile, and business insurance products and services to Central Ohioans since 1921. State Auto is on the web at stateauto.com.
All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We are talking about the president's latest jobs package. He's not calling it a stimulus package this time. It's called the American Jobs Act. He says it's a bill designed to jumpstart economic growth and job creation. He is going to be in Columbus today. He's going to visit the Fort Hays Arts and Academic High School in Columbus to highlight his proposal to put workers back on the job by rebuilding and modernizing schools across the country. Another big element of the proposal has to do with small businesses. If you're a small business owner, if you manage a small business, if you work at a small business and you have an idea about whether about what it would take to keep your small business going, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Joining me right now, Doug Buchanan. He's managing editor of Columbus Business First. And joining us now is Terry Williams-Davey. She's COO of the Computer Workshop, Inc. It's a family-owned technical and professional development training center. Welcome to the show, Terry.
Thank you. Thanks for having me today.
So everybody's always trying to please the small businesses. Are you pleased yet?
I don't know if I'm pleased. I reckon so. I mean, the last couple years have actually been good for the Computer Workshop. So we're bouncing back relatively well. And I'd like to actually, it's funny that we're putting the Jobs Act in because I'd like to see more candidates that like jobs. So I've been trying to hire folks, and
you're having a hard time finding people who are skilled in the what you need.
Who are skilled? Who are willing to do the job? Who are willing to do the hours or the and come to terms with the market that they're in today? I guess is probably where the rubber hits the road. You know.
Wow.
Doug, that's been talked about that they're just the people aren't out there to fill the to fill what's opening out there.
Right, I think it's a skill set issue as we mentioned earlier, and I mean I think that's one reason why both from Governor Kasich and President Obama the need for retraining and to get people into the right industries is critical, and it's going to be critical because a lot of the jobs you were mentioning, construction jobs earlier, well, manufacturing jobs, a lot of those jobs are gone, and the skill sets don't necessarily translate to who is hiring today. Case in point, with the Computer Workshop,
retraining or training is a function of the president's plan. Terry, what would you need? Could you get the sort of workforce, and how could government help you get the workforce that you're looking for?
Right. Obviously training, but also, they do have on-the-job training programs, which I currently have employed one person from that program that gives her training in the real-world situation. So sometimes converting their classroom training into actually doing the job in a professional environment, that gap needs filled. And I do think they're trying to have programs out there to do that.
So it's more of an attitude. I mean, it sounds like
You
have an attitude issue as much as you do a skills issue.
Sure. And then, I feel for people who have lost, relatively high-paying jobs that the small business person really can't afford to maybe pay that salary that they used to make or have benefits that they used to have. But we certainly are willing to hire some folks for the amount of money that we feel we can pay and keep them employed and keep our businesses running. So I think it's somewhat of a turn for the person who's looking for a job to say, hey, I might have to step back 5 years, just like the small businesses have had to step back in the way that we do business, maybe 5 years,
That's an interesting point.
Yeah.
What when you talk about coming back from the recession, you're bouncing back.
Mm-hmm.
What can you describe to us what the impact was on your business a couple years ago when it looked very dark and dreary?
Yeah, we we had our fair share of layoffs and cutbacks, And, you know, being a family business, that means you're, the family does more work and you have less employees and you have less help, you know. And then we've hired some folks back and we'd like to, you know, we've filled in with contractors where we can't hire a full-time personnel. And now we're looking for, you know, we are looking for some personnel to fill in the sales area, training area. But ultimately, we need those large businesses to request some services, too. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Business.
Yeah, it's, like, business it's all great to put a jobs package together, but if I don't have anybody to serve, then we certainly, you know, can't put people to work.
Terry, part of the jobs package was a higher tax credit for hiring anyone who spent long term, I think it was 6 months or whatever it was, a long term unemployed. Are you seeing a difference in the applicants you get from people who have been from long term jobless people?
No, really, no.
So
I'm not getting a lot of applications in that area, so that's, you know, I'm kind of concerned about that. I guess that's what I'd like to say is the folks who don't have jobs need to step up and maybe look at a job with a small business. You know, we might be a good fit for someone, but sometimes we might get passed over because they'll, you know, they don't know us, they've never heard of us.
And they're still looking for that corporate setting.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, that's an interesting idea, too, the idea that people don't know you're out there. It is harder to know where the jobs are out there. How do you, when you're looking to fill a job, and maybe in the good old days when you were looking to fill more than one job, how did you get the word out there? How did you find people?
Well, we've been trying to use, you know, ColumbusJobs.com or Monster.com, you know, trying to use the Internet a lot. We have even, I believe we've advertised even down at Workforce Investment and the COWIC office.
Right.
You know, we've tried to filter through some of those areas which do have ultimate, you know, people who are laid off and unemployed coming through that office. But I haven't had a lot of, I have not had a lot of response. And again, it may be that they don't know who we are. And so they're not taking that step to go investigate and find out this is an older small business and, you know, I might have some security here and it might be a whole security issue.
And, you know, it's interesting that it's a quirk in the unemployment numbers, but if you're not looking for work anymore, you're not counted and you don't count against unemployment. So, you know, I think that there is as Terry's indicating, there's a pool of people out there who have been unemployed for so long. They probably could fit some of what she's looking for. They probably could find something, but they've just been beaten down for so long and getting so many rejections for you know such a long period of time that they're not out there actively looking right now.
Terry, do the people who do apply for jobs, do they tend to be already employed?
Yes, a fair amount are either already employed or are recently unemployed, you know. But I haven't had the person that I just hired though through the COWIC. On the job training, I believe she was on unemployment for at least, or unemployed, I shouldn't say on unemployment, but was unemployed for 2 to 2.5 years. So very long term. And this is not a position, and she did not take a position, which is her ultimate goal position, you know?
Right.
She took a position just to get back into the workforce, which I think people need to do.
Well, yeah, I mean, anyone will tell you, you're better off looking for a job with a job. Do you feel like you're sort of at a disadvantage when you do hire people that they're going to use you as a springboard and you kind of, do you embrace that or how do you deal with that?
As a small business, we've always embraced that. Because
what's wrong with hiring ambitious people, right?
We know that somebody coming out of college with a 4-year degree in marketing does not want to stay in my inside sales department or at our receptionist desk or, you know, whatever entry-level position that we might have for them. But the beauty of that is that most people who are at our company for a year or year and a half who take one of those positions either move up in this company or they find a great job in the public sector and in a large organization because they have some experience under their belt. So,
right.
You know, this is a great step. Small businesses is a great stepping stone for someone getting into the job market.
You're listening to Terry Williams-Davey. She's COO of the Computer Workshop. It's a family-owned technical and professional development training center. Also with us, Doug Buchanan, managing editor of Columbus Business First. If you have a question or comment for them, we're talking about how to operate a small business in the current economy and whether or not the president's proposals will help. Give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org, and you can go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page, as did Colin. He is owners of Colin's Coffee. He writes, "I welcome any action. In my opinion, doing nothing is not an option. People seem to enjoy complaining about the economy, but when someone puts a plan forward, they complain about that too. You can't have it both ways. Take action or stay with the status quo." An email from Armand writes, "Your guest mentioned that businesses now have the upper hand. My comment is that this might be true in short term, but in the long term, if no money is paid to the working community, they're going to lose their market as there will be less and less customers to afford their products. I would like to hear your guest's opinion on this." So, Doug Buchanan, where are we in this cycle and can we hang on?
Well, I mean, we will definitely hang on. I mean, it will improve at some point, but the writer is absolutely correct that if there's, number one, you need to have that consumer spending in the first place to stimulate the economy, but the consumer is not going to spend anything, number one, if they're unemployed, number two, if they're worried about their job, and number three, if they haven't gotten a raise in X amount of time. So I agree with it wholeheartedly, but I just don't see that happening in the near term. I think that things are going to have to improve dramatically before, or at least consistently for a couple of quarters before the businesses really start heating up the job market. And then, as I did mention earlier, I think you will see a mad scramble of people moving and leaving and finding new jobs because they can find better benefits, better money elsewhere.
An email from Gary. He writes, "We, of course, do not know what would have happened with no stimulus, but the Congressional Budget Office says that unemployment would have reached 11.3%, and the International Monetary Fund is now telling governments that they should be stimulating and cease all the austerity moves." That's a point of view.
Certainly. I mean, I don't think that there's any dispute, really, that large-scale government spending on, especially if it's targeted at certain industries, can stimulate the economy and create some short-term jobs. It is a political question, as we were talking about earlier, mm-hmm. about whether you want to actually spend that or borrow that amount of money to get it done, or whether we just simply, through some more targeted measures, may I guess essentially wait it out. But as you pointed out, that's just not politically feasible to not do anything.
Terry, when you look at the matrix of what you cope, the matrix of your desirability as an employer, how much do things like benefits play into it? Vacation, health care, that sort of thing.
It's huge. It's huge. I mean, for a small business, like we have less than 20 people on payroll, and we have a lot of contractors that we use, 30 to 40 contractors. So, when we're looking at health care benefits and 401ks and things like of that nature, our expense as a small business is much more than a large business.
So as a percentage of
as a percent, and what we have to pass through to that employee for them to afford health care is a lot more expensive. So if they come to work for me, they may A, get a lower salary. B, they may have a little bit higher health care or maybe a lot more higher health care, expense that they have. We still have a 401k plan, which a lot of small businesses axed or don't contribute to. That was probably one of the first benefits. So I think that may be the problem with the small businesses, too, is we can't compete with a large business on the benefit side.
And you want to talk about, again, I think we mentioned earlier predictability going forward. And I think for small businesses, you mentioned health insurance. I don't know how many years running now that we've been looking at double-digit health insurance premium increases. And as she mentioned, especially for small businesses, they have smaller pools. They don't get the the better policies that some of the bigger corporations get. And that is a huge, huge expense. And it was a huge expense 5 years ago, and it just keeps getting worse. And so if you, you know, again, want to talk about hiring new people, you're going to, you know, it's part of the negotiation, but certainly benefits as a big part of what is expected by most workers when they get on there. And small businesses just really can't afford to offer the type of health care coverage, if they can offer it at all.
Correct. We have an email from John. He writes, your guest suggests that workers need to accept the new market, a.k.a. lower wages. That would be fine, except that nothing else is lower: rent, gas, food. So at the end of the day, if the wage doesn't pay the bills, why should we take the lower wage?
Right. And that's hard because you've lived and you've gotten yourself to accustom to live under a certain amount of means, you know. And so to pull back and you can't sell your house, you know, the housing market, so they can't even lower their mortgages, and that's tough. But also I remember, you know, in the day when I was starting out, you know, I didn't have one job. I had two jobs. You know, and I think that a lot of people, we are not used to that kind of living. And I think sometimes we just have to realign and say, take what you can get today and maybe go supplement that some other way for a while until you can, you know, till the businesses do better. As small businesses prosper, typically they pass that through to their, you know, to their employees. We do.
Right. And on the other token, as you mentioned, I think there is a cultural difference between small businesses, family-run businesses, and larger corporations as far as the work that's expected and the hours that are expected and the, you know, and the dedication for anybody who comes into that kind of an environment. It's just you're going to be obviously dealing with much smaller staffs, and you're going to be asked to do more.
Terry, has it helped when you go to get contract workers? You're usually working through another agency, right?
In some, we try not to, but in some cases, yes.
And you pay a premium for that, right?
We do, yes. Yeah, help if they come to us directly and say, hey, I want some work.
What sort of workers are you looking for?
Trainers, instructors, salespeople. We just recently hired a night admin person because we're open here from 7 a.m. till 10 p.m. Ohio Christian University uses our facility in the evening, and there's another strategic move as a small business. You know, we've doubled up the use of our space for two different entities, you know, because it works.
Very true.
So, yeah, just looking for some flexible people who can, you know, do great jobs. And the people that we have on our team have fallen into that. I mean, a lot of the folks who are here, who we've recently hired in the last couple of years, this may not be the kind of job that they necessarily would have been, was preferred, but now that they're in the environment and they have some flexible hours, you know, there's good things that come with small businesses too. You know, flexible hours, you know, a lot of emphasis on family and family events. So, yeah, they like it.
James in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, James.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I've worked in IT for a long time, and what I've found is that a lot of times you're better off staying unemployed than taking a low-wage job if you can do it, because it makes you toxic, and essentially you're never going to get another IT job. Because
why is that?
Because the managers are going to look at you and they're going to say, well, what's wrong with this guy that he couldn't get another IT job? He must be a bad employee, so we're not going to even interview him.
You're saying that stigma is worse than long-term unemployment, you mean?
Yes.
Oh.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah, because I've definitely heard there's been a lot of...
Well, that's a function of the president's plan, as it would, by the way, and we're going to have to take a break, but it would ban employers from discriminating against the unemployed when hiring. Terry, before you leave, I wondered what you thought about that. Wouldn't be a problem for you?
It wouldn't be a problem for me. I'm glad to take anyone who's willing to work.
All right. Well, Terry, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. It's been fun.
Terry Williams-Davey, she's COO of the Computer Workshop, Inc. It's a family-owned technical and professional development training center. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation with Doug Buchanan, managing editor of Columbus Business First. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, former FBI agent Ali Soufan talks about his experiences interrogating Islamist terrorists. He got Abu Zubaydah to identify Khalid Sheikh Mohammed as the mastermind of 9/11. But then the interrogation was taken over by the CIA and Abu Zubaydah was waterboarded. Soufan's new book is called The Black Banners. Join us.
Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes starting at noon on 89.7 NPR News. And time is running out for your opportunity to join WOSU for a Chefs in the City Ohio beer tasting. Visit WOSU.org/chefs right now and reserve your tickets. The event is in the outdoor beer garden at the historic Granville Inn, and the event is tomorrow. Local food hors d'oeuvres will be paired with a selection of beers from some of Ohio's best breweries. Tickets are $45 each. Visit WOSU.org/chefs to reserve your seats.
Support for the Statehouse News Bureau stories on 89.7 come from the law firm of Porter, Wright, Morris, and Arthur LLP, helping businesses and individuals solve complex legal problems throughout Ohio, across the country, and around the world. On the web at porterwright.com.
Sunny skies today, a high of 85 degrees. There's a chance of showers and thunderstorms this evening, a low of 56. Sunny for Wednesday, and a high of 75. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We're still talking about small businesses and the president's, well, let's see, what's that called again? It's called American Jobs Act of 2011. Do you think, what do you think about that? And do you think that there ought to be the focus on small businesses that there has been? And if you're a small business owner, a small business manager, a small business employee, do you think, what do you think you need to get the job done and to survive the economy such as it is right now? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Joining me in the studio is Doug Buchanan. He's managing editor of Columbus Business First. Doug, thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you.
You just heard Terry Williams-Davey, COO of the Computer Workshop. It's a family-owned technical and professional development training center. She had some ideas about what she needed, and one of the things she said was that she can't get people to apply for jobs with her because she doesn't offer the benefits. She doesn't offer all those things that a big company with the economies of scale can afford to offer in terms of benefits and that sort of thing. What do you think? Are you out there looking for a job, and what would prevent you from applying for a job with a small business? Do you agree with Terry's estimation of the problem? 614-292-8513. And Georgia in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Georgia.
Good morning. I'm a real small business. You'd better call me a cottage manufacturer. I do products for gift shops. And I really think the most crucial thing for me is consumer confidence, because I've got people coming into the shop saying, "Oh, I've been to 10 different places today, and I've managed not to spend any money," like they're proud of it. And they don't understand that we're not here for their entertainment. We're trying to make a living. And unless the government takes some positive action to lift consumer confidence, I really foresee an end to people like me as local businesses. And I think virtually any action that puts any jobs out there that gives people a positive attitude would be beneficial to me.
I couldn't agree more that that the consumer confidence is going to drive this. Consumer spending is such a huge share of the economy, such a huge driver. But I similar to what we've been talking about with small business sitting on the sidelines, I mean, people have been paying down their debt in record amounts, and they've been sitting on their cash. But again, it goes back to how traumatizing this recession was. And I just don't I don't know when we as a nation, as individuals, are going to feel free enough to spend in that kind of.
Well, we talked about earlier about the banks. It's a new age now. They can't go back to the way it was, because that's partly what got us into the fix. And exhortations to spend notwithstanding, we're also told pay down your debt. You can't afford it.
Which is quite a different message that we were getting 5 years ago when we were told refinance your house, take out the equity, and then go blow that on home renovations or cars or vacations or something like that.
Spend it. It's yours.
Spend it. I mean, yes, it's sitting there in your house, and all you have to do is take it out. I mean, we were looking at our banks, our houses literally as banks. And now that that is not happening again, there's just not that cash to throw around, and then you're relying on your salary, and you know that could be less than it used to be.
Georgia, what do you do?
I manufacture textile products for gift shops, and they're really completely frivolous luxury items.
Right.
And the odd thing that I see is that in two of the shops, I do get some customer interaction. I'm at one of them today, actually, and sometimes I get to talk to the people enough to ask them a little bit of questions about why they're spending or not spending, not just on my merchandise, but other people's.
Mm-hmm.
And by and large, there are people who haven't even been directly affected. It's almost as if they're making a cult of miserliness. It's such an odd attitude. I've done this since 1993, and I've only really seen this in the last 2 or 3 years. And I really don't know if they understand the ramifications of not buying local, not spending local, that, you know, all of these 15 shops in Pell that they admire so much can't survive if they don't spend here. I think people just have an odd twist on their personal situations right now.
Okay.
Certainly, individuals wanting to spend less. I mean, I don't know about if there's a cult mentality.
Well, there's that whole live simple thing, and
right. I mean, I just think that I do think that the overall message that we're getting as a country is much different than it used to be. And yes, I think small businesses, especially those that rely on discretionary spending, are going to have a tough road.
Georgia, thanks a lot for talking to us today. I appreciate it. Hang in there. 614-292-8513. We're talking about small business and how it can survive in this economy. How important is it to us? And also in terms of the President's American Jobs Act of 2011. It's been introduced in Congress. What do you think? 614-292-8513 is the number to call. And Lance in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you very much, and I love the show, by the way.
Thanks, Lance.
I just wanted to say, you know, I want to commend any small business for even offering any benefits. I'm an out-of-work telecommunications technician, and I'm working in a job that, you know, is just basically paying the bills, but it's a small business, and honestly, it doesn't, offer anything, except we don't even get vacation or sick time, anything like that. So I think any small business today that's actually giving any benefits at all, I mean, I just don't understand why anybody would even want to not apply at this lady's company here, because, for me getting no benefits to a little bit of benefits means a lot. So I just want to commend anyone, any small business that even offers it, because there's a lot, right? I think there's a lot of businesses out there right now that just kind of forego benefits completely.
I think that is certainly true, and that number has been growing. And even the ones that do offer a 401k plan or health help with health insurance, they're far less generous than they used to be. I mean, you're seeing that in the big corporations as well, but still, that you're disproportionately going to find that in small businesses. I think that the attitude that you bring is actually starting to grow, that there's just not that expectation that every job is going to come with a good health insurance plan and
any health insurance.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think that the days of that kind of being an assumed part of work are gone.
Thank you, Lance, for the call. We appreciate it. 614-292-8513 if you want to give us a call. And Stanley in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Stanley.
Hi there.
Hi.
I'm a small business owner. We've got two employees, which is basically my wife and I. Mm-hmm. And through the business, we have a retirement plan called an SEP. I'm sure a lot of small business owners are familiar with that. Simplified Employee Pension. We also offer health insurance to our employees. And the problem is, I can't hire any people because I would have to offer them some sort of health insurance. I mean, because I've written these into the business, I would have to put somebody else on my health insurance and my retirement package. But yet, I mean, the retirement package pushes up my expenses. And as far as health insurance goes, since we don't really have a group plan, we really can't hire anybody and have them be on the health plan because it's an individual health plan that's being paid for by the business.
Right.
That's going to be enormously expensive for you to add somebody to that.
Well, basically, I'd have to, we'd have to write them their own health insurance plan, which is it's incredibly expensive. We're paying nearly $2,000 a month just for my wife and I.
Wow.
What about the Health Reform Act? Do you see any kind of help there in terms of once it's out there and people can buy their own through the exchanges that'll take the heat off you?
Well, that sounds like a great idea. The issue is my wife and I have health problems. We're, in our middle 50s. And right now, I can deduct the expense of the health plan as a business expense. If I have to go and get my own insurance, I mean, if I take that $2,000 a year, I'm spending $24,000 a year, that comes out of my business expenses. If instead I go and get an individual plan, then I'm paying that all out of pocket, personal, not business.
Okay. Yeah,
go ahead.
Well, it might be less. It may not be the same exact amount. We don't know yet, do we?
Yeah, that's a big question mark.
Right.
What I've been doing is bringing in subcontractors. I make sure that we meet all the tests to make sure that they're a subcontractor. But I'm not sure if you'd really call that giving a person a job or not.
I would. I mean,
someone's working.
Yeah, someone's working.
You're paying.
Well, but they typically have other things they're also working on. I can't command 100% of their time.
Certainly,
Some of these people are actually corporations, and so it's a corp-to-corp kind of thing, and it doesn't even appear on anybody's list as an employer situation.
Still, I mean, you're still putting somebody to work. I wouldn't downplay that, but you're absolutely right. The trend toward using contractors and avoiding that dreaded full-time employee, I think that is having an enormous impact on what we're seeing.
Stanley, if you hired somebody, you feel like you ought to give them the benefits, or are you saying that you would be required to give them the benefits? What if you just hired people and said, there's no benefits, but I'll pay you a wage?
Well, that comes down to the issue. As a corporate officer, I can't really discriminate against employees versus corporate officers. First of all, there's an incredible, huge amount of paperwork involved in that. But even ignoring the paperwork, I can't really say, oh, you don't get any benefits, but Stanley gets benefits.
I see what you're saying.
This whole idea, I think that was part of what the healthcare reform was supposed to level the playing field between the small businesses and the big corporations and just take that health insurance benefit question out of it. And, if the small businesses didn't have to worry about matching big employers' generous health benefit plans, and they may be able to get more workers who are willing to go work for them. But, as we're seeing now, it's either you have a choice. You go work for employer X and get a nice health benefit, or you go work for a small business and get next to nothing.
What would really level the field is if big employers didn't offer health insurance. And like you were saying, everybody shops for their own.
Right.
Then people would work for me just as easily as they'd work for IBM or something. And,
I think that's part of the goal.
And it would be cheaper for you to maybe give them a premium in their wages.
Yeah, right.
As long as you don't have to go out and spend a gazillion dollars on a healthcare plan that really doesn't even compete anyway.
Right.
Well, and I've talked to other people who work at corporations. I mean, and they're connected with big businesses, and big businesses are cutting back on benefits. And if they did actually, do what you're saying, which is, get rid of the health insurance, for instance, and pay them more, there's no real way to know if they'd actually be paying them more.
Right.
That might just disappear under their wages or not even actually be provided. I mean, right now, businesses are using any excuse not to pay their employees virtually anything. So it's not going to, that may make the situation actually worse for those people working for large businesses.
That'll be an interesting thing to watch, won't it?
Stanley, what do you do?
I work in the computer field, which is actually fairly no barrier to entry there. But I do a very specialized product, which replaces really ancient computers with modern computers. So, actually a big field. I work with government, large aerospace companies, mostly large businesses. They don't seem to have a problem with me being, a two-person shop. But every once in a while, I run into that. It's like, oh, well, you're so small. What happens to you? Well, something happens to you. It's like, well, yeah, that's a problem. But ordinarily, they don't ask that kind of question, and I certainly don't tell them anything about it.
Right.
Okay. Well, Stanley, thanks for taking the time to call us today. We really appreciate it.
Okay.
And good luck.
Thanks.
Well, there's still a lot more to talk about, but not a lot of time. There was the training aspect of it. I was wondering if you could talk about training a little bit, Doug Buchanan. We're almost out of time, but they're talking about the Georgia plan down in Georgia where they pay workers stipends to work in real businesses. It gives businesses the labor while they're also training people on the job. And we were talking about that earlier. Sometimes people just aren't ready to move on. And how do you get the training if you can't afford to get it?
Right. I think that our guest
Terry
earlier brought up a good point that there's training that you can go to school and pay for, and it would be great if the government was helping subsidize some of that because we certainly need it. There's also on the job training where, as she mentioned, you go in there on one level, you prove that you can do that, and you ping pong around or go up the ladder in the company, proving that you can do different jobs that are needed. And I think that there would be plenty of opportunities for that, maybe especially in small businesses. But matching the skill sets with the people out there with what the jobs are is going to be an enormously difficult enterprise over the next 10 years because of all the disruptions. And I think that that's got to be a major component of any kind of a jobs plan if we're going to start getting some traction.
We were talking to a fellow yesterday. He said he spent $50,000 on an education at DeVry.
Okay.
And he can't find a job. And the longer the time goes by that he can't work,
right,
the less that $50,000 buys him.
Yeah, right. Another caller mentioned the stigma,
right?
Especially in IT. You're talking about fast-moving, ever-changing things, and if you're not up to date in your skills, you're going to be toast pretty quick.
Well, thank you, Doug Buchanan, for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
It's Doug Buchanan, Managing Editor of Columbus Business First. And thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 and WOSU 820 Columbus, and streaming online at WOSU.org, 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.